The Right to Question is supported in part by the Paul Allen Family Foundation, by Humanities Montana, and by listeners like you.
I'll never forget the day I read a book. It was contagious, 70 pages. There were pictures here and there, so it wasn't hard to bear the day I read a book.
Hello, book lovers. You're listening to The Right Question, a weekly program that features authors from the Western United States. I'm Cherie Newman, happy to announce that it's time for our semi-annual conversation about recently published books. Barbara Thoreau, manager of Fact and Fiction Bookstore in Missoula, Montana, is here. Also, my MTPR colleague and reading enthusiast, Zed. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Cherie.
Oh, it's fun.
There are a lot of terrific books to read this summer, lots and lots and lots. So grab something to take notes with. You'll also see the entire list at the Right Questions blog, which you'll find at mtpr.org/twq. Let's start with nonfiction. And Barbara, straight to you.
Okay. There is a long list of books, and I'm going to start with books for summer exploring, one of which talks about 11 Western states. How to Read the American West, a Field Guide by William Wyckoff. It's not your typical field guide in that this is also probably a coffee table book, but it divides landscape into many types, including farms and ranches, landscapes of extraction, places of special cultural identity, connections, landscapes of federal largesse, cities and suburbs, and playgrounds. Playgrounds includes Las Vegas, in case you're wondering what a playground landscape is. And this was fascinating. William Wyckoff is a photographer and a geographer, so he introduces us to landscapes of deserts, ghost towns, grain elevators, and bypassed highways. There's also the Japanese internment camps, international borders, urban grid, and regional arts communities. So you'll learn a lot about the 11 Western states in How to Read the American West. Two local, or shall we say Montana, books of note to explore this summer include Hiking Montana, which is in its 35th anniversary edition, which means more people than live in Montana have obviously bought this book. In this introduction this year for the 35th anniversary edition, Bill Schneider talks about the importance of guidebooks and how we need to have them in order to explore locations, in order to have an importance and a feeling for wilderness. And this year also is the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act, which those of us in the West are very thankful for and familiar with and hope that it continues. The other book is The Montana State Parks, A Complete Guide and Travel Companion. This is done by two Great Falls, Montana reporters, Aaron Madison and Kirsten Inbody. I never knew the variety of Montana state parks. I think I've been to a lot of them, but there's a lot more to see and do, and especially when you think about going to eastern Montana and some of the many places that are there. It talks about the collection of natural areas, historic sites, and fun places where visitors are welcome to hike, camp, fish, swim, boat, photograph, and watch wildlife. So those are ways to learn and explore.
I'll mention a couple. One book that was featured a couple of weeks ago on The Right Question is Astoria, John Jacob Astor and Thomas Jefferson's Lost Pacific Empire. It's written by Peter Stark, but it's worth another mention because it's really history that reads like a fast-paced novel. I thought it was thrilling, and I couldn't put it down. And it also made librarian Nancy Pearl's summer reading list on NPR's Morning Edition. Here's a disturbing fact. In 2011, a total of 3,779 and 24 animals were killed by wildlife services in the United States. And evidently, that was a slow year. Statistics like that are what prompted Utah author John Shivick to write The Predator Paradox, Ending the War with Wolves, Bears, Cougars, and Coyotes. And in that book, he argues that it's time to find a new way to coexist with wildlife, and he brings solutions. that could benefit both humans and the natural world. And on the happy end of the animal kingdom spectrum, a new book by veteran wildlife manager and scientist Bruce L. Smith. It's titled Life on the Rocks, A Portrait of the American Mountain Goat. This is just a cool book. It's a coffee table size book that includes gorgeous photographs, all the facts and statistics you'd ever want to know about mountain goats, written into a really engaging first-person narrative. So if you've ever wondered how mountain goats can hang out on those steep cliffs and mountainsides, this book will tell you all about it. What have you got on your list, Ed?
Richard Manning, who's now living in Helena, Montana, and Dr. John Rady have put out a book called Go Wild, Free Your Body and Mind from the Afflictions of Civilization. And they're arguing for a life more patterned after our hunter-gatherer ancestry. And that's what we're hardwired for. That's where our bodies yearn to be. And so we need to move more, get out and go running. We need to spend more time just hanging out with our tribe, with our people, and storytelling with those people. A good night's sleep, a full night's sleep, need to eat seasonally. So as things come into season, that's what should be in our diet. And we need to get out and enjoy nature, running again. It's all about honoring the designs of our bodies. The dog doesn't need to read the manual, just knows what to do. And Richard Manning and John Rady are arguing similarly that our bodies know what to do if we just gave them a chance to live our lives in that way for which we are adapted. It's an instruction manual for rewilding our bodies. And then Aaron Parrott has a great short history of Montana, Montana Then and Now. It's a history that gives you a flavor of what made this place different and the people who have lived here. It's full of trivia. Did you know that almost 20% of Helena, Montana's population was Chinese in 1870? And did you know that we've been part of the Louisiana Territory, the Missouri Territory, the Nebraska Territory, the Dakota Territory, the unclaimed territory, Oregon Territory, Washington Territory, briefly Idaho Territory, before we became Montana Territory 150 years ago?
And Congress designated Montana a territory because they needed to help pay for the Civil War.
All this and more you can learn in this fun unhistory history, Montana Then and Now.
I have one other one with a trivia fact. Did you know that the only place in North America where no species, including the grizzly bear, has gone extinct is in the Wild Rockies, or in the Crown of the Continent? There's a new book called Crown of the Continent with photographs by Stephen Naum, and essays by Douglas Chadwick, Michael Jameson, and Kirsten Heer. We're far from the beaten path, as we always like to say here in Montana, but this book talks about two national parks, or international parks. It talks about Waterton Glacier and Glacier. So we cross those international borders and look at the unspoiled and intact landscapes of Montana and Alberta. The Crown of the Continent is the largest wildlife corridor in the lower 48, and it remains undivided by highways and cities. It's a beautiful coffee table book with wonderful photographs to help celebrate.
For movie lovers, there's Kenneth Turan's new book titled Not to Be Missed, 54 Favorites from a Lifetime of Film. It's a blend of cultural criticism, historical anecdote, and inside Hollywood controversies. In the memoir category, The Map of Enough, One Woman's Search for Place. It's by Molly Caro May, another author who was on this program recently. She spent her childhood moving from place to place and finally landed in a yurt near Bozeman, Montana. So if you've ever wondered about finding your place in the world, this is a book for you. If you're looking for summer projects for the kids, take a look at Sticky Fingers, DIY Duct Tape Projects by San Francisco author Sophie Maletsky. The book is full of photographs and instructions on how to make, to name just a few, bracelets, wallets, tablet cases, locker organizers, baskets, neckties, belts, headbands, and my favorite, bookmarks. And if your kids are animal lovers, this will be fun. Another animal book, A Pronghorn Year, a visual tribute to North America's pronghorns. It follows a family of pronghorn through a year on the prairie. And it's another book that's full of beautiful images.
Not quite sure whether we put John Gierek's books in the fiction or non-fiction category. You might know him from books such as Death, Taxes, and Leaky Waders, and his new one is called All Fishermen Are Liars. Well, at least all fish stories are a bit of a stretch. This is his 17th book, and like his others, it's full of candor and canny insights, and it's just plain fun to read. He's most truthful when he's in his home state of Colorado, and you hear stories about pickup trucks and stories where fishing is the answer, no matter what the question is, whether it's jobs or relationships, poverty, loneliness, or nature. You just don't know how silly fishing really is or how humbling it can be from these stories. But gosh, it makes you want to go out fishing. All Fishermen Are Liars by John Gierek.
So it wasn't hard to bear the day I read a book. It's a shame I don't recall the name of the book. It wasn't a history, I know, because it had no plot. It wasn't a mystery.
You're listening to The Right Question. I'm Sheree Newman, talking with Barbara Thoreau and Zed about recently published books. We'll also mention a few that will be available soon, right at the end of the program, if we have time. And a list of all these books and the entire program will be available online at mtpr.org/twq. It's also posted at our Facebook page. Stick around. We'll be right back to talk about fiction and poetry.
Stupendous. They don't write them quick enough for me. The book of the month didn't come out fast enough, so I read the book of the week. The book of the week didn't come out fast enough, so I read the book of the day. The book of the hour, the book of the minute. But that wasn't even fast enough. So far this week, I've read 6 books that haven't been written yet. But I'm not confined to home reading. I once spent 2 weeks in a library. I would have been out of there sooner, but I buried my nose in a book and forgot which book I buried it in. A dilemma? Why, on the first page of this book, they printed the author's name, and right underneath it was his private phone number. Copyright 1939. But I'm going to send it back. I've been dialing that number for 4 months, and nobody's answered. Nevertheless, while perusing through the library,
So let's move on to fiction, and I'll start off with some of the books for young readers. Boys of Blur is a story of contemporary magical realism by N.D. Wilson, who's an Idaho author. It's about a boy who moves to a small town in Florida that produces sugarcane and the fastest runners in the country. But there are things roaming in the sugarcane at night that can't be explained. And I'll leave it there.
Running is a theme in another book for young adults by Rachel Tour, On the Road to Find Out. It's about running and rats and relationships and college admissions. And these are Rachel's life and form the background of this book, full of young adult obsessions like hair and cute boys and wanting to be invisible. It has a confessional tone, and the main character feels a bit insecure and self-absorbed. There's a tip of the hat to Missoula, Montana in this book, most obviously to the 86-year-old Missoula runner Bob Hayes, but also to local booksellers Barbara and Garth, who are passing characters in the book. The book's mainly about running, and running, of course, is all about keeping going. Also for young adults, Colin Malloy and his wife Carson Ellis have the conclusion of their Wildwood trilogy, Wildwood Imperium. It follows young Prue McKeel, her friend Curtis, and his talking rat Septimus as they go back into Wildwood and the impassable wilderness. There's a lost automaton prince, there's beret-wearing vegetarian revolutionaries, there's an underground collective of saboteurs, and runaway orphans. Does that sound like fun? It's also philosophical. Colin Malloy was an English major born in Helena, Montana. It's droll and it is whimsical. It's a very satisfying conclusion for ages 10 and up.
Another novel for young readers is Jungle of Bones. It's by Ben Michelson. It's the story of Dylan, who's an 11-year-old boy whose father was killed in Darfur in Sudan while he was working as a war correspondent. And that was a few years ago. Now Dylan has started getting in trouble at school and with the police, so his mother calls her brother-in-law, an ex-Marine, to take charge of Dylan for the summer. Uncle Todd takes Dylan back to Portland and immediately makes him start jogging first thing in the morning, among other things. And then he takes him to Papua New Guinea to look for a B-17 bomber that's lost in the jungle. Uncle Todd's mission is to teach Dylan respect for himself and for others, and also to find that lost airplane, which was piloted by Dylan's grandfather. And how about some fiction for adults?
Well, it's always a good time in the summer to talk about fiction for adults. One that's been out for a while, but will sell all summer long, is Larry McMurtry's The Last Kind Words Saloon. This is great fun. It's not the big tome that he's known to have, but it is Wyatt Earp and his brothers and Doc Holliday in towards the end of their life as they are leaving Kansas and going into Arizona and carrying with them a sign that says The Last Kind Words Saloon. It's laugh out loud at points because you see these characters who we all know, we've grown up with on many other types of adventures, kind of know what's going to happen towards the end, especially if you followed Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday, as most people that grow up in the West have. But it's fun to hear their version of what happens when Wild Bill comes to have them in his show and how they think they have to rehearse and use blanks with their guns and things like that. It's also a good summer for mystery lovers. C.J. Box has his 14th Joe Pickett adventure that came out called Stone Cold. So we're in Wyoming and we're wondering about what's going on a big ranch in the remote hills of Wyoming. Nobody's quite sure what the wealthy landowner's doing. And when Joe goes to investigate, he sees another person and he's not sure why he's there. That's Nate Romanowski. So it's a wonderful adventure with Joe and Nate.
It is a good summer for mystery in the West, perhaps a new genre called wilderness mysteries. Keith McCafferty has a new one out. It's his third Sean Stranahan mystery called Dead Man's Fancy. Keith McCafferty is an editor at Field & Stream magazine. He spent time around Bozeman, Montana, where he lives, and he knows a thing or two about hunting and fishing and being a guide and being out in the mountains. This time it's also about the wolf issue and how worked up people get on both sides of that issue. Sean Stranahan is a part-time private investigator who focuses on crimes the old-fashioned way. He gets out and he interviews people and he moseys around and he spends time thinking and trying to put the puzzle pieces together. Terrific descriptions of being out in the woods where the body is found and of tracking back a riderless horse. Dead Man's Fancy from Keith McCafferty.
And from Miles City, Montana, rancher and author John L. Moore has a new Ezra Riley novel titled Looking for Lynn. It's the fourth book in the series, but you can read it without reading the other books because Moore gives a short summary in the introduction. It's a story that takes place in a new West affected by oil booms, billionaires, conspiratorial globalists, and threatened wildlife species. All of which is happening right here, and especially some of that in eastern Montana now because of the Bakken oil boom. And then first-time novelist Smith Henderson has written, I think, a rather astonishing novel titled Fourth of July Creek about a social worker living in a small town in northwest Montana. His name is Pete Snow, and he's really a mess. And nearly everyone else in the story is a big mess, too. The novel is dark, but it's also brilliant.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. I came to really like Pete Snow at the end because he is a social worker and his heart's in the right spot. But his own personal life is a bit mixed up too. But yeah, really, really well done.
If dementia or Alzheimer's has invaded your life, you'll want to read Laura Pritchett's new novel. It's titled Stars Go Blue. It's set in Colorado, where Rennie and Ben Cross are estranged elderly spouses living on opposite ends of their ranch. And when Ben is diagnosed with Alzheimer's, Rennie moves him back into the main house to take care of him, but she's struggling with that commitment, and Ben has decided to take matters into his own hands while also taking care of another problem, dealing with the man who murdered their daughter. Stars Go Blue is based on Laura Pritchett's experiences with her own father, and I think she's done a remarkable job of writing the thought processes of a man who's having trouble hanging on to his reality. I absolutely loved this book.
Two books coming out in the next couple of weeks. One is Wayfaring Stranger by James Lee Burke. This is not a mystery, but it's life in Houston, Texas during the oil boom. It starts in 1934 during the Depression, where Wendell Holland happens to meet Bonnie and Clyde. And then Wendell goes off to the war, and he's a second lieutenant, where he meets up with people from Texas in his regiment, and they come back to Texas to seek their fortunes. And that's where the oil business and Hollywood come into play. A great summer adventure. Another one is The Home Place by Carrie Lesore, another debut novel. Carrie lives in Billings, Montana. The main character has left Billings, has, as she thinks, successfully left Billings because she's gone to Seattle. She's become a very well-known and well-respected attorney. But she's called back home because her sister has died. So we start to explore what it means to be home, what it means to have a place, and how home and place can become very important. There's somewhat of a mystery, but it's really an unraveling of a family story and what happens among families.
One more to consider is Michael Kurita's latest novel, Those Who Wish Me Dead. This is a thriller, and it's set in the countryside around Cook City, Silvergate, and Coulter Pass, near the northeast entrance to Yellowstone National Park. It's a fast-paced chase story where a 13-year-old boy, Jace, witnessed a crime and is being pursued by the two brothers who perpetrated that crime. He's placed with an ex-Air Force survival instructor, Ethan, who runs a troubled youth program with his wife. The wilderness features highly in this one, as does a forest fire that gets started by one of the brothers. There's also a former smoke jumper who now staffs a lookout in the countryside. It's a great place to get lost in with some particularly evil bad guys.
Speaking of dead, K.M. Holava has a novel titled Shaking Out the Dead, also a debut novel. It's a story that follows two women and a 29-year-old man on a poetic journey through the landscape of southwest Montana. In poetry, Lost Horse Press in Sandpoint, Idaho has several new collections, and I'll just mention three of them. From Washington State author Shan Ray, a book titled Balefire, and Robert Michael Pyle's Evolution of the Genus Iris. Pyle is a world-renowned lepidopterist and has written most of the Audubon books about butterflies. They've also published a collection by David Gooderson, author of Snow Falling on Cedars. It's titled Song for a Summons. So check those out from Lost Horse Press. And then a Missoula, Montana poet, Black Bear Holds a Hole in His Paws, Poems and Letters. It's a chapbook by Robert Lee. And the poems and letters are written from and about Heidelberg, a town of 320 people in Alaska. This particular poem titled Letter to Gibbons from Heidelberg begins, quote, Hugo wouldn't like this town. Too wet, no bars, and if women like fat, aging white men, they're damned quiet about it, end quote. So maybe you have to know something about Richard Hugo, the poetry of Richard Hugo, to get that, but that's funny.
I really liked Michael Earl Craig's fourth collection, Talkativeness. He's from Livingston, Montana, and his poems are deadpan, they're intimate, and they're cheeky. It's a world all his own, somewhat pastoral, and there are snippets that linger and images that stick with you. Odd juxtapositions and glimpses of something that you could easily miss. It almost seems like he is apologetic for his very carefully crafted stream of consciousness. You can definitely hear his voice, and it feels a bit like a conversation with the reader about the poem. His poems change tempo quite adroitly with a good use of repetition, playful repetition.
And in August, My Body is a Book of Rules, a memoir by Elisa Washuta. It tells the story of her transition from college kid to independent adult as she navigates her American Indian identity, Catholic school education, and Cosmopolitan magazine's mandate for womanhood. That's coming in August.
And also from August, from the same press, which is Red Hen Press out of Seattle, is Pete Fromm's If Not For This, which takes two river runners, Maddie and Dalt, as they embark upon their lifelong love affair. As they get married and have to change because of Maddie's health issues and how they raise their children, Maddie is diagnosed with MS. And it is a beautiful love story, but it also talks about dealing with issues as they come up in your life. And one that I just have loved from the moment I've read it, it's called Painted Horses by Malcolm Brooks. It's set in eastern Montana, but it has much more of a flavor of the world because you're meeting the young woman, Catherine LeMay, who's an archaeologist. She's sent to Montana this is in the early 1950s. She's sent to look at the land that the power company wants to build a dam on and see if there's any reason they shouldn't build this dam. And then she meets John H., and he is a U.S. Army. He was on the last mounted cavalry, who shows her how to view the land and life in a much different way. And I have to say, the images that Malcolm Brooks has created are still in my mind and will be for a long time. It's a beautiful debut novel, Painted Horses.
Coming in August. We are out of time. Thank you very much for listening to The Right Question. If you would like to see this list of books and find out where you can get them, you can go to The Right Question blog at mtpr.org/TWQ. Thanks very much, Barbara.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you, Zed.
Thanks, Cherie.
I'm Cherie Newman, wishing you a pile of fascinating books and lots of questions.
The Right Question is produced by Cherie Newman, with help from Barbara Thoreau and Kim Anderson. Michael Marsalek, executive producer. Beth Ann Ostein, studio engineer. Music for this program was written and performed by John Floridis. The Right Question has a Facebook page, a blog, and a podcast. You'll find links to all that at mtpr.org/TWQ. Thanks for listening and for supporting this program.